G'day folks, and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. My name's Oliver Brandt, and with me this week are Angelo Valdivia.
Hey, what's up?
And Michael Goncalves.
Hey team.
Luke is away this episode, but we've got a great episode lined up for you this week nonetheless, all about the launch of Nintendo Switch Sports, a couple of high-profile releases swapping release dates, some damning reports about Nintendo of America, and a duo of Aussie news items. But first, let's talk about a fairly big acquisition. Embracer Group, which was formerly known as THQ Nordic, has entered into an agreement with Square Enix to purchase a few of their Western development resources. So they've purchased Eidos Montreal, as it's called now, Crystal Dynamics, who are the people who did the Avengers game that nobody liked, and Square Enix Montreal, who haven't really done.
Are we just putting Crystal Dynamics on the Avengers and not the Tomb Raider side of things?
Oh, I mean, they've done some fantastic things, but like, you know, there's context to this sale, and it's Avengers did poorly. So the deal includes all of the studio's IPs as well. So that includes Tomb Raider, Deus Ex, Legacy of Kain, and of course Gex, the one series that everybody is excited to make a return. So these studios make up the vast majority of Square Enix's Western development resources. The only things that are remaining are support teams for Final Fantasy XIV Online and the Square Enix External, which is the company that does Life is Strange stuff. It cost $300 million US, which is a very, very cheap price for studios of this kind of caliber. And Square Enix will use the proceeds of the sale to invest in NFTs, which, of course, they will. I don't know, Square Enix is a nightmare. So I thought this would be
interesting. Get on that hustle, man, that's why.
Yeah, just as the market is crashing for NFTs, better get in quick before they don't lose enough money. So I thought this would be interesting to talk about, because we do talk about acquisitions on here a lot, and we're all generally against this kind of, like, corporate consolidation, but this is a little bit different, because it's not really corporate consolidation so much as it is one large company giving a section of their company to another large company. It's not like something that
liquidation.
Was... Yeah. So they're basically just, like, transferring 1,100 developers from one publisher to another. It's not like they were independent, although Eidos originally were, and then they went bankrupt, and then, you know, that's how it goes. This isn't, you know, somebody snapping up previously independent developers. These are established things that were underneath a corporate structure that are still going to be under a corporate structure. So, does anyone have any thoughts? Is anyone looking forward to any of these IPs making a comeback? Because a lot of people I saw were very interested in Deus Ex, but I haven't heard much about the other ones.
I mean, it's interesting that people are still hung up on Legacy of Kain, because it's been, what, 20 years since that series kind of mattered? I mean, even Gex, it's like 25 years, so...
Yeah, but that kind of speaks to, like, the fact that, like, Square Enix was, like, sitting on all these IPs and hasn't
done
anything.
I mean, sure, like,
a lot of
developers and, you know, publishers have a lot of legacy IP that they don't use anymore. I mean, goddamn, Konami is still sitting on that gold chest Mystical Ninja, so... But it's just interesting, right? Because Square Enix is... When you think of Square Enix, you think of JRPGs and things like that. You don't think of a lot of these Western games. And it's interesting that they're essentially shedding a lot of their Western studios here. They basically snapped up a lot of these companies over the last 15, 20 years in a bid to make a bigger push in the Western market. And while they did, they really did succeed, like critically and just popularity-wise. Like, they did succeed. A lot of these... IP are really, really popular, like Deus Ex, like completely revitalized the entire franchise in a really interesting way, at least to me. I know a lot of the there are quite a few hardcore fans out there who, you know, still stick by the original Deus Ex game, but, you know, there's been like 10 since that one. So the series has vastly changed since then. But I completely lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. Someone else go. I'm drinking wine at the moment, so my head's a little bit fuzzy.
Yeah, we should probably say that we're filming this on a cheeky Saturday night. So
Bookcast after dark.
Definitely after dark for everyone. I think $300 million is absurdly cheap for all these companies, to be honest. Like,
absolutely.
I'm really intrigued.
When around the same time, Elon Musk is trying to buy Twitter for, you know, 40, 50, 100 billion, whatever the hell the price is now. Like, this is a drop in the ocean.
Oh, yeah, big and time.
Like, what, Sony just spent, like, what is it, like, 13 billion on Bungie? It was, like, an absurd amount of money on Bungie.
Yeah, it was
and
a ton
Microsoft
of money.
Spent, like, 70 billion on, was it Bethesda or Activision? It's been a ridiculous amount of money on someone. Yeah. Activision, right.
And yeah, they have some great IPs. Like, I'm a huge Tomb Raider fan. I'm a really big fan of all the stuff that Crystal Dynamics did with their Tomb Raider trilogy. And if this means we get hopefully some more Tomb Raider at some point, that's great. And yeah, and on Deus Ex, I know a ton of people that are hyped for some more Deus Ex.
Yeah, man. Know. Like, the second one that actually slapped, it was really good. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, well, I think they've already said that they're planning on doing more Tomb Raider stuff. I think they said that was going to be their first big title after the
acquisition. Which
makes sense.
It's by far the biggest thing in that list, so.
But it's interesting to note that, like, none of these developers have actually released anything at all on the Switch, just to tie it back to Nintendo, because this is a Nintendo podcast. But none of them have released anything on the Switch, but it does mean that Embracer now owns the IP for the Lara Croft games, which are supposed to be getting a port to Switch sometime this year from Feral Interactive.
Are there no Life is Strange games on Switch?
There is, actually, but that's not included in the sale. That's Square Enix external, so part of this group.
Fair enough.
I would really like more Lara Croft games. Those are, like, some criminally underrated games. I absolutely love those silly, like, top-down isometric shooter co-op experiences.
Right,
yep. Yeah. Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris and the other one that I never played.
The Dungeon Crawler ones,
yeah. Yeah. And I think that's probably what I'm looking forward to most in the sale, is that, like, THQ Nordic or Embracer, they don't mind using their IPs in, like, weird and different ways as long as they're good ideas. So, like, you know, THQ Nordic or Embracer were, like, the people who did they got the license to do the Nickelodeon All-Stars battle thing. And, like, nobody would have expected that there would have been, like, a SpongeBob Smash clone. But, you know, they gave the money to do that. And, like, with all these IPs that they now have access to, they could do some really interesting things with them. But it'll take time, unfortunately.
So I've jumped back on my train of thought. So what I was trying to get to was going back to how cheap, like, this entire acquisition is, just to put in perspective, like, Deus Ex alone, which you'd probably consider one of the lower performing games in terms of sales compared to something like Tomb Raider or whatever, because it is, you know, relatively niche. Like, in terms of just sales of just the latest Deus Ex game, would have vastly exceeded $300 million. Like, if you think, you know, $60 a pop, and, you know, say, like, you know, 20 million people bought the series, you know, those two, the two Deus Ex games together, whatever, I mean, that's already there you go. Someone else did the math for me, but it's a lot of money, basically, compared to what the entire, what those, all those companies are being bought for is worth, like $300 million. Like, it's such a steal at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those situations where, like, all of the potential was there, and there's no doubt that all of these studios are filled with absolutely wonderfully talented people. But, like, having those studios and managing them are two very different beasts. And I think Square Enix at this point sold them for cheap because they just didn't want to have to manage that anymore.
And that's it, right? Because buying the companies is different to then supporting the companies ongoing. Like, you just paid for the license or the name, you know, essentially the deed to the house. But, you know, you've still got to renovate that sucker and rip out all the carpets and, you know, restore everything and then maintain everything and all that, those kinds of things. So there's still a lot of cost involved.
Yeah. And, like, there were numbers out. Daniel Ahmad on Twitter, who is an industry analyst, was basically saying that, like, you know, there's numbers showing that the amount of money that Square Enix spent to keep these studios going was way more money than they ever made. And, like, part of that is mismanagement, and part of that is that, like, because Square Enix is headquartered in Japan and all of these companies are in North America and Europe, just, like, the amount of resources for translation and all of that goes into that is absurd. Like, it's an incredibly high amount to have to deal with having to do that. And like a company like Nintendo or Sony has the money to do that. A company like Square Enix, not really so much. So like they put a lot of money into those resources and a lot of things can be streamlined simply by virtue of having the companies managed by someone that is local to them rather than someone that's halfway across the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about NFTs.
Well, let's not.
Let's not.
Because well, that's really the second half. I don't really have much to add to this, but like that's really the kicker to this whole thing, right? Is that Square Enix is shifting its focus towards NFTs and really taking advantage of whatever that space might be for video games. I mean, that's the thing. Is like no one really knows what NFTs means for video games. And even Ubisoft, like there are rumors abound that Ubisoft is looking to be acquired. Meanwhile, they're also like shifting focus towards NFTs as well and incorporating those somehow into video games. So I don't know.
I still just find it wild to this day that like the consensus list that I've seen, I don't know, maybe just because I'm on this side, is that it's pretty clear to me that people who play video games don't want NFTs in their games. Like, I don't know if that's just the side of the argument that I'm on, so that's all I'm saying, but I don't think it is. But for some reason, all these companies that are doing it be like, hey guys, so we heard you want NFTs in games. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Where are you getting this information from? It's just so weird.
It's because they don't care about the opinion. It's not the opinion they're worried about. It's the massive influx of cash that's going into NFTs that's all that they're really paying attention to.
That's right? The thing, right? Is that like there's all these like crypto companies that have so much money that they've scammed out of other people. I shouldn't say scammed, that they've acquired from.
Is the right word.
they've scammed out of other people that like they have just sitting around and ready to invest, and like saying like, hey, we really want to get into NFTs is a good way to get that investment money. And like investment money is money that you don't have to spend yourself. So, yeah. But like, I would genuinely put money on like NFTs being in Final Fantasy 14 online by the end of the year.
But I think like if you were chasing investment money for NFTs, which clearly this is what it sounds like, why sell these for such an absurdly cheap amount of money? They could have gotten more.
Oh, they could have gotten more, but I think it was just like an expediency thing. They wanted them gone quickly so that they could focus on other things. They just didn't want to spend the time and resources to do it properly. So it's just like, is somebody willing to buy these? Sure, here's the price.
But I also look at something like Avengers, like, you know, these games are service games. If the game isn't a huge hit right off the bat, then maintaining them for a prolonged period of time, like over years with more content and maintaining communities and all these kinds of things, like in events, like you're sinking so much cash into that in that regard, which makes it even more difficult.
Yeah, the $300 million mark just feels like them cutting their losses rather than actually trying to make any money.
Essentially, yeah, that's what I get from it too.
But, you know, they're going to stick NFTs and all this shit now, so look forward to that. Let's move on to some slightly positive news and slightly negative news. We've got a couple of Australian news items here, one good and one bad.
Finally!
Well, good, sort of depending on the perspective, because it's something that should have happened a long, long time ago. So Nintendo Australia has finally added the search function to its digital web store. So when you're in a browser and you go to store.nintendo.com.au, you can now actually search for a digital game rather than just having to go through the lists. So we actually got
the soundboard effect now.
Can you search for NFTs?
I'm sure you could, but nothing's going to come back yet. I'm sure NFT games will make the jump to Switch at some point.
We're going to make a game called NFT and just rake it in just because people are buying a game called NFT.
Where are my bored apes, damn it?
So the store only launched like properly in December 2021. So it was only like 6 months ago. And it only had listings for recent games, sales, and charts. So you just had to scroll down the list and hope that what you were looking for was in those lists. So now you can actually search for it. It's a long time coming. Every other region has had this since 2014. I mean, they've had a digital store since 2014, which we only got in December. But now we have Search, which, you know, obviously with all of the other digital stores, they had from day one. So, you know, slowly but surely we're getting there. There's still no filters on searching in the Nintendo Australia web store, and there is in a couple other stores that are overseas, but it's already just like such a a huge step up from the nothing that we've had previously. So
this is such an Adelaide story, and like, hear me out for a second. What I mean by this,
oh my God,
is that, like, you know, all the eastern states, they got their Krispy Kreme, they got their 7-Elevens, they got all that stuff, but Adelaide gets none of that. And then when Adelaide finally gets like a Krispy Kreme, we're all like, yeah, we finally got a Krispy Kreme. That's exactly what this news story is at the moment. It's like Australia finally got a search function. Australia's like, ah, look at that, we finally got search.
I mean, like, we're celebrating, like, you know, search being added to a digital store, and like, you know, that's 8-year-old news for the rest of the world.
Man, video games are so stupid.
I mean, I feel like that's more than 8-year-old news for like literally any other storefront on the planet.
Yeah,
this is some, again, peak Nintendo BS on stuff. It's just so dumb.
I will say that, like, the Microsoft store has been like a nightmare to use on a web until like the middle of the Xbox One's lifetime.
Yeah, I like, think actually, that has like, to do with like their search algorithms, like, have always been bad. And basically, when they've been improving them in Windows, which was awful in Windows 10, like absolutely awful, nothing worked. And they finally nailed it in Windows 11. They can actually use that search bar and actually find something on your computer.
It's because they finally incorporated Bing to its full extent. That's why.
Definitely. Powered by Bing, but, baby.
Yeah. You're right that it was 2007 when Sony launched the PlayStation web store, and you could purchase things for your console from the Sony web store in 2007, so 15 years ago, and we just got search. So, you know, one day we'll get filters. It'll be in like 2029, but we'll get filters.
And then themes.
And now, like, with all the new consoles, with PS5 and Series X, all their storefronts run really nicely on their consoles. So they're one step ahead again, and I can't wait to see a storefront run nicely on a Nintendo console.
It's not going to happen.
It will at some point. Like, it has to just, like...
There was, like, a 2-month period where, like, the Nintendo Switch eShop was actually running really, really well. And then they added this feature where, like, if you hover over a game, it'll, like, go through the screenshots and, like, the little thumbnail. And that just, like, turned it to shit after that. So it's like, you know they can do it. They just haven't done it. But, yeah. I mean, like, the other stores aren't, like, 100% perfect. Like, I find that the Xbox store, when you go into the Game Pass section, at least, it takes multiple tries for it to get it to load the old games in Game Pass.
I've not had that issue, personally.
It doesn't appear. I'm using a Series S, so maybe it's to do with that. But yeah, scrolling down to the bottom.
If a Series S can't run a storefront, we've got other problems.
But yeah. So some other Nintendo Australia news. So Nintendo and EB Games have closed the Nintendo Experience at EB Games Swanston Street in Melbourne 14 years after it opened in 2008. So the Nintendo Experience was hosted by EB Games and co-managed by EB and Nintendo, and offered like a look at the classic Nintendo consoles which were on display. You could, you know, play with friends, charge your consoles while you were there, and try out new games. It was recently renovated in 2018 to do a whole bunch of Switch stuff, and yeah, it's closed down now with EB Games using the top floor, which is where it was for storage. So I think, Angela, you tweeted that you hadn't actually noticed that this existed, or you hadn't been there?
I mean, yeah, like, when I heard this news, I was like, oh, damn, like, that even existed in Australia? I didn't even know we had one of those. And like... I understand that some people are like, oh my God, that's where I went for like the midnight launch. But like, it's a store. Like, it's just a shop. Like, shops close and then other ones open. Like, it's...
Yeah. But I like, it was, for a lot of people, especially if they lived in Melbourne, it was like a sort of lower pressure, like, hangout place. So it's like, let's meet at the Nintendo Experience. We can go like play games or just chat or whatever. You know, like, I don't know. I personally, you know, I haven't lived in Melbourne. I've been there a few times during PAX stuff.
Well, so yeah, like, even I've been to so many PAXes and I'd never heard of this place. And I used to frequent Melbourne, like, I'd go there once or twice a year just to hang, because I like going to Melbourne because, you know, Adelaide. But
I was like, because you're a cool dude.
Because I'm a cool dude hanging out in Melbourne. But yeah, and I'd never heard of the place. Like, so I guess
I'd heard of it, but in all the times I went to Melbourne, I never went there.
Yeah. And, like, I understand, like, for people local there, like, it's a hangout spot, but, like, it's a shop. It's just, there are other shops. It's fine.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, it was definitely, it seems like a well-kept secret, because like half of the responses when we posted the article to Facebook were like, oh wow, I go there all the time, and then like the other half was like, wow, I didn't even know that was a thing, because like it's not advertised anywhere. Like, there aren't like things on Nintendo's website that say, hey, come out, check out the Nintendo Experience, you can play Switch Sports here or whatever.
It's not the Nintendo World Store, right? Like a beacon where we can get very exclusive items and see very rare objects of Nintendo's history and things like that.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't like an actual store. It was just a space that had Nintendo games in it. Like, you couldn't like buy anything like Nintendo merch or whatever from there. It was just like the top floor had like a screen, some displays of old consoles, and like you could play games there.
Yeah, I will say Nintendo has some very lovely barcades.
Yep.
Wait, did I say Melbourne or Nintendo? I meant to say Melbourne. I'm drunk. What's going on?
You said Nintendo, but yeah. I was like, wait, what?
I'll will edit this all out. It'll be fine, guys. It's fine.
Ollie, if you edit this out, I'll be very angry.
I'm so glad that Luke's not here to see this.
Yeah, I mean, like, I usually, like, edit out all the stuff that, like, makes us look dumb, but maybe I'll leave this one in. we'll see how it goes.
Look, don't touch anything.
So, because I mentioned Nintendo Switch Sports, that actually segues nicely into our next topic. So, Nintendo Switch Sports launched on the 29th of April, which was a week ago, and our editor-in-chief, Daniel, reviewed it, giving it a 3.5 out of 5, which is a decent score, but a little low given Nintendo's recent output. So apparently the sports themselves are pretty good, with elimination bowling and soccer being the standout games of the pack. But unfortunately, pretty much all of the unlockables, like costume pieces and titles and stuff, are locked behind online play. So you have to go online and play with randoms to do that. And you can only unlock things when playing with randoms and not with friends. Which is just, like, the dumbest, like, Nintendo decision ever. Like, it's cosmetics for your character.
There's that monkey paw.
This could, like, only hit more peak Nintendo if they didn't allow you to back up your save file to online service.
Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't checked that. That may be the case.
Like, literally, like, there are, like, 4 hairstyles for dudes. None of them I have. I'm like, what is this? Like, I literally look like some, like, 13-year-old chode right now. This looks nothing like just a normal comb over that I normally have. So silly.
I think you need to adapt your hairstyle in real life to match your Wii Sports character, obviously.
I think that's absolutely what it is, for sure.
I mean, importantly, though, you can wear a bucket hat. So that's one of the unlockables that you can get in-game, which is, you know, great Australian representation in there. But yeah, have other people played it? I was sort of talking with Daniel throughout his review process and his frustration with the lack of anything to do when there's no online. And I sort of read the review and edited that as well. And I decided it's just not really worth me picking up, because I don't really have any interest in playing online sports with random people that I've never met. I don't know. It doesn't seem really worth it to me. And there's only like 6 games, and like golf isn't really something that I'm really looking forward to either. Compared to like Wii Sports, which had like 11 games, and Wii Sports Resort, which had even more. So, yeah. Did anyone else pick it up? I'm assuming you
did. I picked it up. I haven't actually played it yet, but like I picked it up, A, because I'm an idiot and I buy all the Nintendo stuff, and B, like I would just definitely play it with friends when they're over. Like, it's just one of those games that it's a party game that everyone will enjoy. So it'll just get broken out when people are over doing stuff.
Yeah.
See, we did pick it up, and I was looking forward to it so much. And still, the idea of it gets me really excited. Like, I still love the idea of Wii Sports, and I still have such great memories of playing Wii Sports. Like, for like the first year or two when I picked up the Wii, like, it's just such an amazing game. And I'm just thinking about why. Like, when we played it, like, my girlfriend and I were playing it, and we're like, well, fine, we're having giggles and things like that. But then we put it down, and we're just like, that's it. It's more Wii Sports, but. I've been thinking about it over the week and why it just didn't sort of capture the same way. And I think it actually has to do with the fact that it's on the Switch itself. And what I mean is, like, first of all, the Joy-Con just they really don't hold a candle to the Wii Remote itself. And maybe the technology, it's better itself, like, you know, better sensors and things like that. But when you hold a Wii Remote, like, it has some heft. So when you do something like bowling, for example, you're holding something that actually has some weight to it, and you actually feel like you're bowling something. When you're holding a Joy-Con in your hand, like, Joy-Cons weigh nothing. So, like, you're literally just waving your arm in the air, so you don't really feel like you're even doing anything. And for me, at least, when I was doing the bowling, I wasn't able to sort of get spins and things like that in the same way that Wii Sports, that I could in Wii Sports, for example. I could get spins and things, but I had to do it in a completely different technique in a different way. So I don't know if that's because the sensors are just better now. So, like, you know, I don't have to sort of game the game itself anymore like I had to with the original Wii Remote. But it does feel a little different in that regard. And the other thing is, I think the other big novelty about it wasn't just Wii Sports itself. It was just the Wii ecosystem, because when you get friends over for the first time and you play Wii Sports, like, you don't just jump in and play Wii Sports necessarily. You move to the Mii channel and you make your own Mii, and then you put that into Wii Sports. And that's what you're playing with. And everyone's got their Miis, and then you're using the Mii channel to download all the stupid Miis, like Admiral Akbar's face or something like that. And you're like, oh, look, there's Hitler. But like in this, like, you know, you've only got like a dozen choices for hairstyles and things like that. Like, you're not really, you can use your Miis as well, but I don't know, it just doesn't hit the same in this regard. Like, all the ingredients are still there, but I don't know, it just doesn't taste the same for some reason.
It's also like, so I was 100% going to bring up the controller thing, and I completely agree. Like, the responsiveness of the motion controls on Switch compared to Wii is just not even the same caliber. And that's purely because Wii has no way of knowing the positional data of where your controller is in space compared to the console, which the Wii can do.
Right.
So it just isn't the fact that you can just pick up a Wii controller and it is instantly calibrated as soon as you turn it on, and it knows where you are and it knows where you're pointing. And that'll always be like that when you're playing a game. You don't need to really need to recalibrate it. Whereas, like, with the motion controls on Switch, constant recalibration if you move it some weird way or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't translate well to a game that's really, really heavily pointed in motion controls. And the whole weight thing is totally accurate as well. It doesn't feel substantial that you're holding something. Yeah.
Like, think about all those people who broke their TVs. It's because they were holding a damn chunk of plastic with some metal in it. Now, if you fling your Joy-Con, like, it's not going to do anything. Like, it does feel completely different. And the other thing I just realized as well, again, going back to the whole Wii experience, when you're navigating the menu of Wii Sports, like, you're using the IR pointer, everything was about using that controller. The entire experience of playing that game was using that controller, and using the IR pointer to navigate menus and stuff was way more intuitive. And now you're just doing it with the joystick. And, like, while that's normal, like, again, it's just that. It's just normal. You know, they've normalized the experience of the game. It doesn't feel like something new and fresh and exciting like Wii Sports did. So in that regard, it's like a...
Because you're switching between the two inputs. You're switching between motion controls and normal controller controls. Where on the Wii, it wasn't like that. You were constantly using the whole experience of the Wii Remote at every point in the game, which is awesome. Which is what made Resort so magical.
I think like part of that though is because like the Wii Remote was specifically designed to do that, right? Is it like the Joy-Con wasn't designed to be used as like a pointer in games, which is why games don't use it as a pointer. So like this kind of game like isn't a good fit for Switch really, because like it's not designed around that motion pointing experience. Whereas like the game kind of benefits directly from having that experience, and the Switch just isn't capable of providing it. So
I guess it's just like a great textbook example of user interface compared to user experience, like UI and UX essentially. Like the Wii just absolutely nailed user experience, and this just replicates just typical user interface, which is just kind of bland. But you know, it's still the same game and stuff. Like if you never played it before, you might have some fun and things like that. And like you don't have to play online. Like the online option is there as an option essentially. But yeah, I mean, like, golf not being there as well is a little bit disappointing, but it is a free update or free upgrade or whatever, as far as we know, coming soon. So there is that too. But again, like, Joy-Cons weigh like nothing. Like, I'm just holding a bare hand to the ground pretending to swing a golf club. Like, I'm not holding something in my hand and swinging that in the air. So we'll see.
I was going to say, though, it is worth noting that, like, you say that, like, people used to break their TVs because of the Wii Remote, but people are still breaking their TVs now. there's been many, many clips from Twitch, and also I think even a media event where somebody threw their the Joy-Con out the TV. So
the 2022 TV breaks now come from virtual reality. That's the big killer.
Yeah. Well, it's like back in the day, if you broke your TV, it's like, oh, better upgrade to an HD TV. These days, you break your TV, it's like, well, I better buy another $3,000 TV. But the last point I'll also make is, I guess like this time, we all have to go out of our way to buy Wii Sports. To buy Switch Sports. Whereas back in the day, you buy this magic little box with a TV remote that can, you know, do all this cool stuff, and you get a free amazing game in it. So I guess that's another barrier to entry.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll still sell like hotcakes because it's
cheaper as well.
It is cheaper, which is good. I'm really glad they went with a budget release for that, especially on the eShop. It costing like $56 is a really good price point for it, I think, because I was very worried that it was going to end up being like another $80 game and be very bare bones, but it's not. And hopefully Nintendo sort of continues that sliding scale of pricing rather than just pricing everything at $80 and letting it go.
Look, just make the games $30 cheaper and put more NFTs in them. That's it. Problem solved. Done.
All right, so our last sort of main news piece here, Splatoon 3 and Xenoblade Chronicles 3, both three games, have done a bit of a switcheroo. So Xenoblade Chronicles 3, there was a new trailer and a new release date given for July 29. It was previously slated for a middle to end of September release. So it's moved up a good 2 months there. And Splatoon 3, on the other hand, which was slated to release in winter in Australia or summer in the US, has now been moved to September, which is obviously Xenoblade Chronicles 3's previous release window. So it's pretty clear that these release dates have been sort of swapped. Like, when was the last time you heard of a game being moved forward 2 months rather than delayed 2 months? It just doesn't happen in the modern game environment.
There have been examples, but I can't think of them.
Michael, I think you've muted yourself.
God damn it. I was saying, it was just a straight tag team. That's like slapped each other into switch spots.
Yeah. I mean,
there have been examples of that happening.
Yeah, but it's a rarity. Like, it's certainly...
Yeah, super rare. Super rare.
And Splatoon launches on my birthday.
Yeah.
Nice.
Fun thing for you, then. Although I remember...
Oh, is it?
I remember you not being particularly great at Splatoon.
No, I'm not. I actually enjoy playing it. Like, I enjoy playing it with you guys. I'm just really bad at it. Like, give me a mouse and keyboard, and I will dominate. But, like, use your controller? I'm just so bad.
Mouse and keyboard on Splatoon 2.
Oh, my God.
What's going on there to, like, stomp the 15-year-olds that you're playing against because you've, like, attached a mouse and keyboard to your Switch?
Oh, please. I'm definitely playing against, like, 45-year-old, like, Japanese male players that have never left the house on that game constantly.
Give me a flat stick and let's boot up ARMS.
Yeah. So, there's not really much to talk about here. I'm very excited for Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and it coming 2 months sooner is, like, great for me. But like the only other thing that I want to bring up is that Splatoon 3 on all of its eShop pages, because it's now, you know, listed on there and you can pre-order it kind of. It now says that that cloud saves are actually supported, which is, you know, not something that we should really be celebrating.
Revolutionary.
It does say that like cloud saves are only supported for single player progress. Which kind of suggests that the online progress will be saved online, server-side, rather than client-side.
Which is fine.
Like Splatoon 2 was. Which, you know, is how it should have been in Splatoon 1 and Splatoon 2. It should have been saved
like,
server-side.
We discussed
regardless.
This many, many moons ago, when it's like, this is 100% a solved problem, and Nintendo made this problem themselves.
Yeah.
So, but as much crap we give Nintendo, if this is the case... I'm glad they figured it out.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is that, like, it seems like they've done it. So, like, you know, September's a long time away. They could still change the eShop listings and you know, change it to save client-side. Or it just, like, if you lose your console, you just straight up lose your online, but you can keep your offline progress. Who knows how it's going to work? It's Nintendo, so it's probably going to be, like, messed up in some stupid way.
It'll launch in September and be like, this game doesn't support saving at all.
You just have to keep the game open on your Switch. You're not allowed to close it.
here's this passcode you have to memorize.
But yeah, so that's you know, those two games are coming out when they come out. I'm sure we'll hear plenty more about it if you follow the Nintendo Twitter accounts. They are drip feeding information for Splatoon 3, which is still so long away. But that's how marketing works now, so yay. Moving on to our feature discussion. This is not going to be a light-hearted discussion because it's quite a serious topic, which we usually don't do for feature discussions. We usually stick to something a little more fun, but this is something that is important to talk about. So, I mean, I've got this subtitled as "The Culture's Fucked at Nintendo of America." So, mm-hmm.
Good yeah, thing to I'm put drunk, it lightly, let's do this.
It is, yeah. I've written up a little thing here. So there's been reports from Kotaku and IGN that have come out over the past couple weeks, detailing a company culture at Nintendo that treats contractors as, quote, second-class workers. The reports feature statements from a number of former contractors and employees who've spoken of bad pay and inability to voice dissent or contribute to discussions at the company, an inability to progress through the ranks or convert to full-time stable work, and generally poor working conditions. So that includes things like being discouraged or outright banned from using a lot of the quality of life facilities offered to permanent employees. So that's things like cafes and, you know, cool down rooms and all of that kind of thing. Strict attendance schedules, which apparently it seems like, you know, you can't really like have any sort of flexibility if you're a contractor. Discouragement from taking sick days. And a fear of posting to social media lest they be reprimanded or fired, which we know that like full-time permanent employees do have a lot more say on social media than the contractors do. So former Nintendo of America president and recent crypto enthusiast Reggie has claimed that the reports do not reflect the Nintendo he left, saying that he knows he was able to achieve a healthy culture at the company. These claims are a little dubious, however, because, you know, some of the reports from Kotaku that had statements from staff describe incidents and working conditions dating back to 2011 and earlier. One was as far back as 2008, although many have said that the conditions have worsened in 2015 and beyond. So this is, like, obviously quite bad. It's not like, you know, Activision Blizzard scale of, like, shitty companies, but, like, it's shit. Like, there's no other way to put it. It's a terrible look for Nintendo. And, like, it's sadly not uncommon either. I think pretty much every single game studio that I know of in the US is exactly like this. Contractors are treated just like absolute shit. They have no say in anything. They struggle to get, you know, full-time work. I know that, for example, like, there were QA testers who were contract workers at EA, and for a time there, they had 6 weeks rotating contracts. So they would work for 6 weeks, and then they may have their contract renewed after that. But that was only guaranteed for 6 weeks. And, you know, these kinds of culture things are a part of American capitalism, not to get, you know, too commie on the podcast. But, you know, capitalism straight up encourages companies to, you know, have workers that necessarily depend on them. And that is why we have these sort of like two-tier systems where like full-time employees get a lot of benefits and healthcare and, you know, nice things, and contractors just sort of have to deal with it themselves and they get nothing. So yeah, I mean, like, I don't, you know, Michael, you said it, but I don't believe that Reggie is really telling the truth here, or if he is, like, he was just like way too high up in the company to really know about it or care about it.
We were talking about this in chat where it basically it's either the case of he doesn't know about it, saying the truth, which would make him a terrible leader, or he does know about it and is lying. Like, it's crap either way.
Yeah, and like there's no doubt that like it's gotten worse since 2015. But, like, again, a lot of these reports are coming from, like, 2008, 2011, 2012, 2014. And, like, these are all before Reggie left Nintendo of America. So,
yeah,
like, it's clear that things were bad under Reggie. They're probably worse now, but they were still bad under Reggie.
Yeah. COVID did definitely not make this better at all.
No. And, like, that's sort of true of, like, other Nintendo things. These aren't really, like, my stories to tell, but I've spoken to people who work at other Nintendo branches, leave it at that, who've said that, like, COVID really, like, was a bit of a turning point from the company, and it led to a lot harsher and a lot stricter working conditions for a lot of people across not only Nintendo, but other companies as well. So, yeah, I mean, if anyone has anything else to say their bit, because...
Yeah, like, I made the mistake on, like, the IGN article of going into the comments and reading.
Oh, which, Jesus, you know, Christ.
Where a buyer has its suit, if anyone wants to read those comments. There was a lot of like, yes, of course, this is how it is. Like, a ton of companies are like this. And 100%, they're correct. But there's some apathy around that, whereas, like, I think people need to understand is that a company like Nintendo, especially of its caliber, can choose not to be like that. It's a choice. It's a choice that they can make. They can choose not to be, like, completely horrible, and they can afford to do so, and they're choosing to be like this. And I think one of the most egregious things, which I think is just horrible, is having these people in contract positions for years, if not over a decade, leading them on with a seeming lie that they will have permanent work at some point and be able to receive these benefits for working for Nintendo of America. I'm assuming the benefits from a full-time... the term they use is NOAs in the article compared to something contract. The benefit difference must be quite substantial, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you, like, look at the reports, like, the contractors aren't even working, like, in the Nintendo of America building. They're working in the old loading dock.
Yeah, it's like a peasant building. Literally, it's like, hello, underling peasants, go to the peasant building and work, please.
But, yeah, you're right. And, like, you know, they have this two-tier system where there's red badges and blue badges. Where, like, the red badges are the full-time permanent staff and the blue badges are, you know, the Nintendo contractors. And, like, you know, it's even stuff like break rooms. Like, you know, we know that in Nintendo of America, if you've got that red badge, you've got, like, super nice break rooms and, like, there's TVs and vending machines and all of this nice stuff. And then, like, apparently over at the Nintendo contractor, the blue badge break room is just, like, a room with a table and a couple chairs. And it's, like, there's, like, a huge disparity in, like, how these workers are being treated. And, like, there shouldn't be, right? Because, like, we talk about, like, you know, their pay is shit, but, like, when Nintendo hires a contractor, they're hiring through a company. And this is, like, true of basically everyone in the software industry. They hire contractors through a particular company, so that company gets the cut as well. So, like, they could just not do that and pay all these contractors more. Make them full-time employees. And yes, that means hiring, like, bigger and more competent HR teams, but, like, that's what you should be doing. Like, there's no reason not to do that. You know, this is a company that, like, you know, Nintendo was in, like, its most recent yearly earnings report, had the highest actual profit, highest operating profit of any games company in history. Just completely unmatched, just pure profit. They had the highest. And they can't treat, like, half of their employees at the same standards as the other half of their employees? Like, it's just complete nonsense. Like,
I think there was this really insidious part in the article where they were talking about how it definitely seemed to be very much ingrained in the culture, if not encouraged, that these red badges were to treat the blue badges in this manner. Like, they were like, it's like a Lord of the Flies type scenario where, like, there's these two factions and, like, one is clearly superior and they must, to be part of the gang, they must treat this other group of people, like, poorly, which is just gross. Like, it's just horrible.
Yeah.
And, like,
Go on.
I was gonna say, like, it's sort of like, you know, there's no benefit to, like, red badges, like, sort of speaking up about this either, because, like, they already have all of the benefits, right? Yeah. And, like, making a stink about it just means that, like, you're getting attention that you don't want or need. Like, I don't know, like to think that I would speak up about, like, that kind of thing, but, like, on the other hand, like, I imagine some of those red badges at least were people that used to be blue badges, and they got up and out, and they don't want to lose that. And
it seems to be, like, barring the recent closures in Toronto and California of those offices, the article seemed to suggest there still is a culture of the red badges being seemingly untouchable for the most part. Like, they still want to look after those permanent employees, which is great. No one should argue that that's not good. But to your point, like, if you have this type of power where you're seemingly untouchable, like, you can just continue doing the garbage things that you're doing and there'll be no consequence to you. Like, yeah. it's horrible. Sorry, Angelo, you've been quietly sipping wine in the corner this whole time. Please.
Yeah, man, I'm just getting sloshed over you. But, yeah, no, I agree with all the points that you're all saying. And yeah, like, it's like a self-imposed, like, class divide among the employees, the red badges and the blue badges and things like that. And, like, it does stink because, as you guys have pointed out, like, Reggie Fils-Aimé came out and even he said in statements since the articles have come out, like, he was on, like, a couple of podcasts and things like that, one of them being IGN's own podcast, and, you know, saying that he wasn't really aware of these kinds of issues and that what didn't really happen under his watch. But, you know, as you guys pointed out, like, these reports come out under his watch during his tenure, but it could very well potentially be the fact that he's just so far up the top that he just doesn't mingle with those who are just towards the bottom. You know, he has no reason to sort of be down there in the trenches. He's working with other executives and other supervisors and things like that to maintain that the company is running from the top down. And then it just kind of like filters down a little bit. A lot of that goodwill probably just doesn't filter down to the other employees. But I think this is just a general issue with the wider tech industry in America in general. Just a lot of contract work, like prolonged contract work, because in a lot of the tech industry and just America in general, like, the corporate work is just, it's all about the bottom line, right? It's what capitalism is. You just got to make the most money, you got to make the highest profits, and the way you do that is by not spending money. And you don't spend money by not giving people full-time work. You just take them on as contractors and you pay them for, you know, X amount of time rather than an ongoing salary and giving them health benefits and things like that. So if you can avoid it, then you do, because you make more money that way. And it just seems like Nintendo is just part of that problem. And they're not the only game company that is. Like, so there are so many other game developers who have had all sorts of issues, not even talking about, like, Activision. Like, you know, that's a whole separate thing with sexual harassment and stuff. I'm just talking about this huge class divide or just worker rights in general, I guess. You know, you think about, like, EA being voted the worst company in America kind of thing, and you've got Amazon, who, you know, their drivers have to, you know, urinate in bottles because they just can't take a moment off to use the toilet while they're working. It's just so many gross things like that. And the worst part of it is that it is Nintendo, that Nintendo isn't immune to these issues as well. And everyone has such high regard for Nintendo as the Disney of video games, and this is what happens behind the scenes.
Well, I think, like, if anything, this confirms even more that they're the Disney of video games.
Yeah, 100%.
We know that Disney does this same kind of shit.
Yeah, let's say, like, things are just as bad over there as well, so yeah.
Yeah, it is a huge problem across the tech industry, and particularly in the US. It happens in Australia, but, like, absolutely not to that extent, because we have strong worker protections and unions exist here.
But also, we just don't have companies on that scale either.
If anything, like, this has really, like, shone a light on the fact that American workers in general, not just at Nintendo, not just across the tech industry, they all need to unionize. Like, it's the only way things are going to get better is through collective bargaining. And, you know, that's something that, like, has had a huge wave in every other country, and it just hasn't in the US. You know, there's been, like, 80 years of union busting, and, you know, while it's, like, legally protected to unionize in the US, it's not really.
Well, it's not profitable for the people on top to allow the workers to unionize. It eats into their profits.
But again, like, they're legally required to allow them to, but they can say otherwise. And
but it's also not illegal for them to bust it either.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. Whereas, like, technically it's illegal to bust unions, but, like, in practice, that means shit, right? Like, it's just how it is in the US.
They don't have enough worker protections to really make that stick, quite frankly, especially in places, well, pretty much the majority of the US is employment at will. So they can just be like, well, I don't want you to work here anymore. Goodbye now. And, you know, they can definitely take them to court for that type of stuff. But, like, these people more likely won't have the money to do that.
Well, that's it. These companies, you know, can just lawyer up at the snap of a finger, as the people at the bottom who would have to actually be taking them to court, like, couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
The world sucks.
Yeah.
That's it.
And, you know, America in particular, kind of the suckiest of the suck. Well, not the suckiest, but, like, of, like, developed nations, like, it's, like...
Those guys are the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked. I love that.
But, yeah, like, get your shit together, America, because, like, just holy shit. Like, how is this allowed to happen? Like, how is this a thing? And, like, that feels like something that, like, so many people say so often about America. Like, how is this a thing? But, like...
Ollie, if we're going to be talking about problems with America, I'm going to need more wine. There's a lot going on over there at the moment.
There is a lot going on over there at the moment. Although, there's a lot going on over here at the moment, too, with our federal election coming up.
Oh, Lord.
Let's get into that.
Will be
election cast.
Well... Funny you say that, because, like, our next recording date will be literally the day after the federal election.
Oh, Lord.
So, maybe we will have an election cast. Probably not. I know we don't get to tend to get into politics too much, but, yeah. All right, I'll just quickly go over the Fortnite forecast, because it's very quick, and then we'll hop into 20 questions. So
yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, on May 10, we've got Wolfstride, which is a lovely little... indie game that's being published by Raw Fury. It looks absolutely fantastic, so check it out on the thing, on the eShop. On May 11, I don't know how to pronounce this, Iyuden Chronicle Rising. I don't know, it's E-I-Y-U-D-E-N.
Is this an anime game?
I guess.
Sounds like an anime game.
It's vaguely anime-ish. It's like a prequel to a game that hasn't come out yet, so...
Oh,
I don't know.
Those are the best ones.
So there's like a full like Iyuden Chronicle coming out like sometime next year, and this is like the prequel thing. Yeah.
I looked up a Google video. There is literally a Google video on how to pronounce this. It's Iyuden. Iyuden. Okay. Oh, goddamn, I've forgotten already. Give me one second. It's Iyuden.
Iyuden. There you go.
Yeah, Iyuden
Chronicle Rising. So look that up. On May 12, we've got Vespa Zero Light Edition, which is a game made out of made from a bunch of guys in Italy that are all under 30, and they started their own game studio. They actually told me about it. They slid into my DMs on Twitter and had a little chat to me about it, so that was fun. And the other one is Dungeons of Dreadrock, which
I've been waiting for this to come out on Switch to play it.
It's so good. I've got the review copy, and my review's going up around the launch date. But goddamn, it's such a good game. It's like this fun little like dungeon crawler puzzle game. It's basically like if you took like a single room of like a Zelda puzzle and then like made that of like a Zelda dungeon and then like made that into a game. That's what this is, and it's just such a fantastic game. So yeah, there's going to be a review up for that. Probably on the 12th when it goes live. And there's a 50% discount on launch day. So it'll only cost
How much
17.
Is it on Switch? Because it was like absurdly cheap on
iOS. So it's $15 normally on Switch, but 50% launch discount.
Oh,
so
well worth it. I played it a little 50. Bit on iOS. I'm just not a huge fan of playing a game that sort of requires a controller on like a phone.
Yeah, although like
I played on iOS was great, which is why I want to play it on Switch.
The control scheme for mobile is like genuinely a really fantastic way to do it. With the swipes and holds.
Totally. But, like, I'm not saying it's just not for me.
I will say, it is way better. It's also on Steam right now as well. Launched on Steam recently. So, many different places to play it. And the developer is a really lovely guy. 20 questions! We are already at an hour. Jesus Christ. I'm just going to get my digital tally up. So this is actually...
out, Angela, and add it to your soundboard.
So
finish my wine here.
After the call out in the last episode telling people to like get their shit together and send us suggestions, I've received probably about 20 DMs across Discord and Twitter. So people were very good. I've got a long list now, and I was thinking we might do a stream to just like a fun 20 questions stream at some point.
Yes, yeah,
where we just like go through a bunch of them. So there were actually, as I said, many people who reached out to me. Three of those people, which is good old Dazzle, as always, Linkwick, who has suggested some stuff in the past, and Matt from Twitter, no last name, I guess, it's kind of like Madonna.
He's really Matt on Twitter, it's fine.
So they all reached out with this game in particular. They had other games as well, but three people suggested this one game, and it's only crossover in all of the lists, so I absolutely had to do it. And yeah, I'm sorry.
It'll be a good one, Michael. Here we go.
I also just want to point out that obviously Luke's not here, and quite frankly, Luke is our saving grace a lot of the time, so please be kind when Angela and I fail.
Especially in this one, I feel like Luke definitely could have contributed. He probably could have gotten this one in like five questions.
Well, we're definitely going to miss his absolutely random shot in the dark.
Totally.
All right, but because Luke isn't here, I'm willing to be a little bit more flexible with answers and clarifications.
It's fine. Hard mode, let's do it.
So, go on. Ask away.
All right, I'll start off. Was this game released after 2010?
It was not released after 2010.
Okay, so I'm thinking it's Grim Fandango in that case. That's the only game that's speaking to me. all right, was this game after 2000?
It was not after 2000.
Okay.
Oh, that's not good. Was this game released after 1990?
Was released after 1990.
Yeah. Okay, so between 1990 and 2000.
Yeah.
Or not 1991, I guess. Is it after 1990?
Did this game have 3D graphics?
I mean, not in the way that you would consider them, no. Definitely not 3D graphics.
We would assume 2D game then.
All right, so I'm assuming it's not 64 then. Like, that's probably a safe bet. So it's probably SNES, late NES or SNES.
Mm-hmm.
Or
handheld.
Or handheld, goddamn. They also existed.
Mm.
Guess what else that? Was this released on a handheld console?
It was released on a handheld console.
Nice.
Okay. So that narrows it down. And there was only really the Game Boy.
Game Boy Color by then.
Yeah, of course. That's what I included that.
When did GBA come out? Was it 2000? 2001?
2001, I want to say.
I think it was 2001. I also just want to point out that I have not played this game, but I've seen speed runs of it, so I'm fairly confident I can answer most of
the questions. That was my next question. Can you speed run this game? Yeah.
That's either a very popular game or a really obscure game, because that's the only spectrum that speed
run. All right. If it's a speedrunner, we would probably assume it's a 2D game, but should I clarify that?
What?
If it's a platformer, sorry? That's what I meant to say.
Oh, platformer. I was like, it's definitely a 2D game. It's definitely a 2D game.
Yeah. It's only a 1D.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so is this game a platformer?
It is not a platformer.
Okay. Well, then that does knock out a bunch.
It does, but like, there's a lot of Game Boy Color
Yeah,
games.
Sure.
A disgusting amount.
Well, we could figure out if it was a Game Boy Color game. Could ask that.
Yeah, I guess. But again, that would cut it down.
It would.
Is it really worthwhile? Is it going to really help?
I mean, it knocks down. It files down to a certain amount of time, like what, 98 to 2000. So if we want to knock out 2 years.
What's the next big genre on Game Boy?
Puzzle games, or races, maybe races.
Should we try a puzzle?
Yeah.
Is this a puzzle game?
Not a puzzle game.
Oh, goddamn! Okay. Not a platform, not a puzzle game.
Those are like two only games that exist. All right, was this game developed by Nintendo?
It was not developed by Nintendo.
Is this game part of a series?
Just let me check. Yes, this game is part of a series.
All right, second yes. So what series are there that weren't platformers or puzzlers?
Oh, it could be a fighting game.
Could be a fighting game.
Or a racing game is up there too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like races. A racing series. I mean, like, there's like, in my head, I can remember a Formula One game, but I don't know if that counts as a series.
Are we including like Metroidvania games as platformers? I assume we are, right?
I would say that, yeah, a Metroidvania game is a platformer.
Yeah.
At least all of the ones that I can think of that were on the Game Boy.
It could also be like a shmup.
Oh, yeah, of course. Shooters.
There's so many shooters on Game Boy.
Yeah, absolutely. You could ask that.
Was it a shooter/shmup?
I would say that it's a shooter, yeah.
Oh, here we go. Love a good
shooting.
There's
okay. for sure shooting in it. And I think like most people would say that it's a shooter, yeah.
Okay.
10 questions.
Oh God.
On the Game Boy, I don't think there was an R-Type.
Surely there was an R-Type on Game Boy. All that crap came out on Game Boy. Yeah.
I can't recall. In my head, I can't think of one. I'm trying to think of other of shooters that were on. I know there were some, but I can't think of any off the top of my head. Would like those Desert Strike games count as a shooter? Those are like more isometric and they're weird.
Desert Strike?
I'm thinking of like those games where like you're a helicopter out, you know, in a war zone and you're shooting down other helicopters and things, but then you've also got to pick up soldiers from the ground and stuff. But like there's literally one in my head from like
I know what you mean. Mega Drive. Yeah, I would call that a shooter. I think like if we're going like by the shooter genre, which is probably pretty broad, it would include shmups or see, would it include something like a Contra game? Would you call that a shooter? Mm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing, right? I guess it would be. That's
I would main... call a Contra game a shooter.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, like, because, like, one of the main things you do in that is shoot. Like, there's some light platforming, but, like, a lot of games have light platforming.
Yeah. But this one doesn't have platforming, though. So something like a Contra, I would class as a platformer as well.
Mm.
I know it's a hybrid, obviously, but there's two things you do in that game. You jump on platforms and you shoot dudes.
Oh, God, how can we narrow this down?
I could ask if there's vehicles, if you're in a vehicle for the main crux of the game. We haven't nailed down regions. We just know it's not developed by Nintendo.
I think a vehicle is probably a good one.
Okay.
Ask up.
For the majority of the game, are you traveling around in a vehicle?
You are not.
Okay. All right, so this probably wouldn't be like a shmup then, because pretty much all shmups are like you're inside of a ship of some type.
Yeah.
Oh,
what about,
God.
What about something like a Metal Slug? I don't know if there was one on the Game Boy.
Oh, would this be classified as a shooter?
Well, that's it, right? Because you're not really platforming a whole lot.
No, sorry. There was an internal monologue that came external. Or was it okay. Worms. Worms on Game Boy.
Ooh, that's a very good one. Oliver.
I'm not sure I would consider that a shooter.
Okay.
Although that's a very good question. I don't know what Wikipedia... I'll look up what Wikipedia says Worms is.
I just got Worms in Humans. Worm Wikipedia.
It says it's an artillery tactical video game.
Oh, classic Wikipedia.
Sure.
I legit thought I had a look moment then where I just had this amazing epiphany.
I mean, like, yeah, like tactical, yeah, like you're taking turns. Strategy? Probably, yeah.
It's exactly the same as Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
You've got 8 questions and a guess left. You still don't have...
The only type of thing I can think of would be like a Contra-style game. If you're not in a ship and you're a shooter.
Yeah.
There weren't any first-person shooters on Game Boy, were there?
I can't recall one. If there was, it'd be something like a really lo-fi Doom. Let's try region.
Yeah, if you want to. Like a development region.
Yeah. What do you think would be... more likely to have developed a game like this?
Oh, man. It's so all over the place. It's either... I'm going to say it's probably... Oh, actually, no. It really could be anything.
Should we just say Japan?
Yeah, let's try Japan.
Was this game developed in Japan?
Not developed in Japan.
Oh, God damn it.
This is awful. Everything about this is awful.
It's going to be developed on, like, some African island or something like that. Some region we've never considered before. Like, in Antarctica or whatever. All right, I'm just going to bite the bullet. Was this game was it released during the Game Boy Color era?
Yeah, good one.
It was released during the Game Boy Color era.
Oh, thank God. All right, that narrows it down quite a bit.
Wait. You should have phrased that question differently.
Well,
released during the era, like a normal Game Boy game could have been released in the Game Boy Color era.
But there weren't many that were released in the Game Boy Color
I'll give
era
you this one as a freebie. It's a Game Boy Color game.
Okay, cool.
Okay, yeah. Because there weren't many that weren't Game Boy Color games. Like, there are only a few that I can think of, like the Pokemon games and, like, the original Pokemon games and, like, the Game Boy Camera. Those are really the only ones I can think of. Everything else was color. At least that was popular enough.
Mm. Still don't have exactly where it was developed.
Yeah, this game wasn't part of a series, was it?
It was part of a series, yes.
Oh, was part of a series. Sorry.
Yes.
I was thinking that Resident Evil game, but that was definitely developed in Japan, like for sure.
Hmm. Well, so it's part of a series as well. We've overlooked that, and it's a shooter.
I was also thinking that like a Metal Gear game that would also be developed in Japan.
Hmm.
You can ask more about gameplay elements that are available. I mean, all you there's not vehicles.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if it was, or wondering if it was a licensed game.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Is this game? Is this a licensed game?
It is not a licensed game.
Okay. Rigidage.
To my knowledge, at least. I mean, if this is a licensed game, I'll be very surprised.
Is this five left and a guess?
Five and a guess.
I feel like we're close.
It was a Turok game.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Perfect Dark game?
That would have been after 2000.
It might have been in 2000, which I think is in the range.
I think I asked after 2000. Oh, right. Yeah,
after 2000, which would mean 2000's included.
I didn't clarify that. I've made some dumb questions tonight.
I don't know. That's fun.
Or at least phrase them in silly ways.
Earthworm Jim as well. But I feel like, I don't know if I would classify that as a shooter or a platformer. Probably a platformer.
So Earthworm Jim is a platformer for sure.
And that was also a license, right? I would say that's a licensed game.
Is that? I actually have no idea if that's licensed or not.
It's like based on a comic book series and then a cartoon and stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty sure the comic book series is first.
Perfect Dark wouldn't have been developed in Japan.
Yep. Could ask if it was developed in Europe.
Do you say Europe or we should go like specific United Kingdom?
Whichever. Whatever you feel.
All right. Was this developed in the United Kingdom?
Was developed in the United Kingdom.
Because in my head I was thinking, God, what if this is like one of those weird... I was like, what if this is one of those weird European Infogrames games that was from like Sweden or Switzerland or something. But no, that's good. So it could be a Rare game or a Team 17.
Or Team 17. How many questions do we have?
You have four more questions and a guess.
All right, if we ask if it's Rare, it's got to be Perfect. I can't think of anything else.
Sure.
All right, was this developed by Rare?
It was developed by Rare.
Okay.
All right, now we have to be very careful. Because Perfect Dark is all that I can think of, and I'm getting tunnel vision. I need you to regulate my thoughts.
There was also a Conker game. Conker's Lucky Tales. Yeah. That came before. I remember playing it. That came before Conker's Bad Fur Day. And I remember you shoot stuff, you get like a slingshot. It was sort of top down.
How can we...
I'm trying to just figure out if any of our questions...
Okay, we can ask if the main character is a human or an animal.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Which one?
It doesn't really matter. You get the same result either way. okay. Is your main character a human?
The main character is a human.
Okay.
Like, as far as I know. They might not be, but they appear human to me.
I guess the next question is it a woman?
Is that what you're actually asking?
No. I was just confiding with Michael.
Oh, man. Okay, what franchises did they make? So they made Donkey Kong 64. They obviously made GoldenEye.
They had
Jet Force Gemini.
They also did...
Was there a Jet Force Game Boy game?
I don't recall one. There was also Donkey Kong Country. No, Donkey Kong Land, sorry, on the Game Boy. That was before the Game Boy Color era.
It was, and the main characters are not human.
That's right. Ape.
I mean, I feel like that's pretty definitive.
Okay. Yeah, I can't think of anything else that Rare might have done.
Okay, I can't remember playing the Perfect Dark game. I remember it existed. I'm assuming Joanna Dark is the main character of the game.
I remember her being on the box. I never played it, but I remember seeing the box and she was on it.
So we can ask if the main character is Joanna Dark?
Sure, or just be broad again and ask if it's a woman. I can't think of any other women that are in games, but then again, I can't think of... If it is that, it's got to be Joanna Dark, so...
How many questions do we have?
Yeah, two more questions and a guess.
Oh, so we can just do both. We can ask if it's a woman, and then if you want to clarify, we can do...
Sure.
All right, cool. Is the main character a woman?
The main character is a woman.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Diddy Kong. Let's do it. Wait, no, Daisy Kong. Oh, how drunk am I? Daisy Kong.
Very.
God damn.
Should I ask?
Yeah, do it.
All right. Is the main character Joanna Dark?
Main character is not. No, she is. It is. It is. It's the main character. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Make you scared for a moment there.
What was the name of the game? Is it just Perfect Dark?
Well, I haven't guessed the game yet.
Exactly. No, we haven't guessed the
game. I think it's just Perfect Dark. Oh, God, I hope so.
I can't remember.
Oh, no. Why did you do this to me?
It might just be Perfect Dark. Because I don't actually know the story of the game. I don't know if it follows the story of the N64 game or not, or if it's its own separate thing.
Oh, man. We have to just guess Perfect Dark, because I wouldn't know if it has a subtitle. Well, and surely we can just guess Perfect Dark.
It'd be strange, right? Because Perfect Dark, the actual Perfect Dark, is on Game Boy, but on N64, it's Perfect Dark 64, right?
No, it's just Perfect Dark.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, go for it. I'm just making a simple thing really complicated. Just go for it.
All right. Is the game Perfect Dark on Game Boy Color?
Alrighty. So, developed by Rare and released for the Game Boy Color in the year 2000, in August 2000 even, the game follows Agent Joanna Dark as she completes her training at the Carrickton Institute Research Center. It is a direct prequel to the Nintendo 64 game.
Yeah, prequel.
And features a top-down perspective where the player can move and shoot in 8 directions. It's also a bunch of mini-games, one of which is a first-person shooting thing, so I'm really glad that you didn't ask if there was first-person shooting.
Oh, man, that would have been really screwed us.
So it is Perfect Dark. No subtitle.
Oh, thank God.
Good suggestion. Thank you for that.
Yeah, great suggestion. Yeah, that was a good one.
Fantastic suggestion. And Luke obviously isn't here right now, but he's the next person, so he's everywhere socially in the Discord, Twitter, and all of that. RenderMan7, so go send a whole bunch of suggestions to him as well. Although, not the ones that you sent to me, because that would kind of defeat the purpose. That about wraps up this week's VookCast. Be sure to visit the site www.vooks.net for all your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. You can also visit the site at vooks.au, because we have a direct.au URL now. So, you know, take a look at that. Why not? To keep up to date, follow the site on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I don't know, maybe we're on TikTok, I haven't looked, at vooks.net, that's all spelled out, or jump on over to our Discord at bit.ly/vooksdiscord, which is all lower caps. Angelo, where can people find you?
Just look me up, Google Angelo Valdivia, find stuff.
Find him in the closest Dan Murphy's.
apparently. I don't even drink.
That's
apparent, quite frankly.
Yeah. I'm a cheap date. I'm such a cheap date.
Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Discord, Twitch, Twitter, Sub-Element.
And you can find me in Discord, Twitter, Twitch, all of the things, at Chocobalt, Chocobalt. Send me feedback, hot tips, hang out with me as I play dumb games on stream. Whatever you want. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next fortnight.